Hello and welcome to the Euromoney Conference's online podcast for the 3rd of April 2014. This is episode 7 and we're going to be talking about Turkey. Before that, I have to give you this long list of things that you can do to make your life better by being more social with us. You can follow us on Twitter at EuromoneyConf. You can register at EuromoneyConferencesOnline.com, where you can also download this podcast. If you're interested in Turkey and in Eurasia, you can go to EuromoneyConferences.com/Eurasia, where you can apply for a place at the Eurasia Conference, the Eurasia Forum, which will take place in Istanbul on the 3rd of June. You can also subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. And as of this week, you can go to iTunes and search for Euromoney or Euromoney Saudi, and you can download our Saudi Arabia conference app, which will give you all the information on that conference and will allow you to use social media to also message other participants, as well as keep updated of all the developments in that event, which is scheduled to take place just over a month from now. So we got through that. Now it's my great pleasure to welcome and to introduce to you Alper Ince, who's a partner and managing director at PAMCO, all the way over on the other side of the Atlantic and the other side of the North American continent in California. Good afternoon or good morning, Alper.
Hello, good morning, my time zone. Go ahead.
Just tell us a little bit about PAMCO and about yourself and about your interest in Turkey.
Sure. PAMCO is an institutional hedge fund of funds firm based in California, London, and Singapore. We run about $9 billion discretionary assets and additional $6 billion advisory assets on behalf of large pension funds, sovereign wealth funds, and institutional investors, such as insurance companies and endowments. I'm a partner and managing director at the firm. I've been with the firm since 2002. My primary responsibility is running a portfolio of assets on a hedged format with a focus on long-short equity and event-driven equity strategies. Our interest in Turkey has been more from a hedge fund perspective. We like the opportunity set that's created from volatility and dispersion within the marketplace that we feel can be best exploited by bottoms-up stock-picking securities with an awareness of the macro environment.
And you are also, by birth anyway, Turkish, is that right?
Yes, that is correct.
But that said, the last time I saw you was in Bahrain, so, you know, you're no means, you know, a pure Turkey play. But let's, you know, we're here to talk Turkey, so let's talk about it. We're on here on recording this on Wednesday evening in London, and 3 days after the announcement, confirmation that the AK Party won somewhere in the region of 44.9% of the votes in the local elections that were very much billed both by the candidates and by the media as a open inverted commas referendum on the rule, close inverted commas, on the rule of Prime Minister Recep Tayyip Erdogan. This level, although it was down by a few percentage points from the AKP's performance in the last elections, which were, Alper, am I going to get this right, 2011?
Correct.
I had a wonderful chart that I've filed somewhere on my desk and can't find it at all. So I'm doing this from memory. I mean, it's a little bit down, but it is much, much stronger than people were thinking. When I was in Istanbul last week, most of the people that I talked to, admittedly not wild and crazy Erdogan supporters, were talking about 38, 36, you know, mid to high 30s, which, you know, for the AKP, and they clearly came in much stronger than that. Alper, what does this mean? Is this now really cemented the Erdogan administration in power? Is it the ringing endorsement that they wanted to get?
Yeah, I mean, the result was certainly better than expected for AK Party. And we have two more elections, or possibly one more election, because there is a possibility that those two elections may be combined. The next one being the presidential elections in August. The political uncertainty has come down, and the tail risk that people were concerned about, whether this local election was going to be a game changer in the sense that the AK Party and Erdogan dominance was going to be weakened after what we have experienced over the last 6 to 7 months. But certainly that didn't happen, and the political establishment continued to be strong at this point.
So it's not a game changer, except that it might, as some people have said. I mean, a week ago, the idea that Erdogan might stand for president was, again, many commentators were saying, was off the cards. It wasn't going to happen. This was the big problem. But now it seems to be back on the cards again. What's the implication of that? I mean, he's done 3 terms as prime minister, which, according to AK Party law, according to AK Party rules, is he has to stand down as prime minister. Although, of course, he could change the rules. But he's talked about wanting to be president. What would that mean if he did stand for president?
So that's certainly on the table now. And what it would mean is the continuation of the Erdogan dominance in the country. But what it means in the sense of whether this is going to change the old presidential system and perhaps make it more U.S.-style presidency, that's going to be discussed and debated as we are talking about this. But if he goes to just a traditional president position, as we know it in Turkish system now, that's not going to mean much. But we also need to figure out who's going to be his replacement, whether he has identified his succession plan. That's going to be on the table, and we will hear more about that. That's certainly not being widely debated at this point.
I mean, there is a model for this president prime minister switch a little bit to the north of Turkey, just across the water in Russia. You know, where Mr. P just swaps job. You know, but doesn't really swap his role. Is it possible that, you know, they could keep the constitution within Turkey the same, and yet if Erdogan was moved to the presidency, even as it is constitutionally defined at the moment, you know, he would still be the de facto power in the nation? Is that fair to say?
That could happen, but I believe the consensus thinks, given the political tailwind that he has experienced from local elections, that he's going to be more ambitious than that.
Right. Well, he's certainly not a man who lacks ambition, that's for sure. So, you know, we have this political direction now. I think most people believe that Erdogan is still going to be in the driving seat, that the AK Party will still be in the driving seat, that there is no major shift in the political power structure within the country for this year, at least. What does this mean for the markets? I mean, they were very jittery last year, and especially in the first 2 or 3 months of this year. We've seen a 20% depreciation in the lira since August last year. We've seen quite a lot of volatility, which obviously is good for you as a hedge fund person. In the equity markets, we've seen, you know, some volatility, not as much as might be expected in the CDS numbers. Are we now out of the choppy water and into a period of relative calm, do you think, in the financial markets regarding Turkey?
I don't expect a calm in Turkish markets as a result of this local election. Markets started rallying ahead of election and started pricing in a strong presence by AK Party, which realized, and markets continued to rally afterwards, especially the higher beta Turkish bank stocks that are major component of the index that were trading below book value. Now they reached back again book value, and in certain cases over book value. But we also need to think about the global emerging market environment, where emerging market assets were quite a bit of a consensus short or underweight position in long-only portfolios as a result of what happened over the last 2 to 3 years. Emerging markets have been underperforming developed markets by a large margin. So value buyers came in, and we've been hearing that the institutional value buyers are still committed to the emerging market space. But also some of the larger bearish positioning had to be covered because of the strong rally that we are seeing in emerging markets for 8-9 days now, rally. So Turkish market is an important component of the emerging markets. And, you know, throughout my 17 years career, I don't really remember a period where Turkey has been in such headlines where people are focused on the central bank decision back in January, where, you know, central bank did that midnight rate hike and people were watching it live. So Turkey is an important market in that sense, and people also categorize Turkey as one of riskier, higher beta markets as a result of the current account deficit that the country has been running for a prolonged period of time.
Well, let's come on to that. I mean, I've got some numbers in front of me about GDP, current account deficit, things. Let's talk about those. You know, there's a lot of anxiety about Turkey. It's in the Fragile Five. It was featured by a number of institutions as the most fragile of the Fragile Five, pointing to the current account deficit. But yet, if we look at the most recently released GDP numbers, which was for fourth quarter 2013, it still grew around 4.5%. You know, which is it's less than it was, but it's still a pretty decent growth rate. The trade deficit is narrowing. It's still big, but it's narrowing. And you know, we're seeing a decline in credit growth, which is presumably partially what the Central Bank of Turkey wanted to achieve. So, you know, despite all this volatility, despite all this negativity, the numbers that we have at the moment, and we don't, of course, have the Q1 2014 numbers yet, it being only the 2nd of April, are reasonably positive. Do you see that, you know, Q1 is going to be an ugly quarter and Q2 might be a little better, but still might be a lot worse than the tail end of last year for the Turkish economy?
Yes, certainly last year's GDP numbers were slightly better than forecasted. But we need to look at 2014 expectations, and I'm seeing 2 to 2.25 GDP growth, which is certainly a slowdown. And current account deficit has improved, but that's been primarily caused by seasonality. And we also need to get positive data points from Europe, which is a key market for Turkey. European recovery is important and crucial for Turkish trade deficit to improve from here. And that's not that recovery is far from certain. There are expectations that ECB is going to do something tomorrow and there are some expectations that ECB is not going to do anything, and they are going to wait for more data points. European deflation is a key risk, and if that doesn't get addressed by monetary authorities, that's going to impact Turkey. I also worry about corporate sector leverage in Turkey, and the corporate sector's net short currency position. You know, if we see another move in Turkish lira against euro and dollar, that's going to impact the corporate sector, and we may see NPLs rising from here. And that's not discounted by the market. Certainly, recent data has been positive, but people need to go beyond 2014 and really look at 2015 expectations to be able to justify current valuations in Turkey.
Yeah. So, I mean, certainly from an anecdotal perspective, the people that I've spoken to in Turkey, the bankers, the investment bankers, the deal makers, are pretty uniformly saying that the first quarter of this year has been a very tough quarter. So I think that, you know, I agree with you that we need the numbers for the first quarter to see what the direction is. But let's stay with this corporate sector leverage thing. I mean, we're always trying to find and look at where the risk aspects are within a particular economy. And, you know, traditionally, one looks at government debt, one looks at the banking sector as the two primary, you know, risk areas in any economy, but or the real estate sector. The public sector debt is, relatively speaking, quite low. It's about, 43% of GDP, something like that. So compared with international, with Europe or the US or Japan and other emerging markets, it's in a reasonably good place. The banking sector, allegedly, again, you know, depending upon how you look at the numbers, is also relatively well capitalized. But the area that people always talk to is the corporate sector. Why is the corporate sector so leveraged relatively to other countries?
Turkey has been booming because of construction sector and some infrastructure developments that's been led by the government. You know, you see the third airport, large projects in Istanbul. And I'm sure you notice whenever you travel to Istanbul, you see constant construction activity as a result of government leading by subsidies, but also just private construction companies trying to take advantage of the current environment with lower rates. So the construction sector driving the economy and being a very important part of the GDP growth, and that happens through leverage. And those corporate sectors are just taking advantage of lower rates globally. And you know, if you can borrow in U.S. dollars and invest in Turkish assets and do that carry trade in the Turkish economy format, you can make a lot of money from that.
Until the lira depreciates, and you have to pay, and then you have to pay back your dollars, and you suddenly find it's 25% more expensive than you thought it was. How much is up for refinance this year? I mean, I've heard some pretty wild numbers. Many, many billions. Is that right? Do you have a feeling for the?
That's the difficult part, because most of these companies are private, so they don't have to disclose what their real balance sheet risk is. So, I mean, those estimates are going to be off because you don't have visibility to what the real financing requirement is going to be this year.
So, we keep an eye on our news feeds for that. Over the course of the next 2 or 3 months, to see whether we can begin to see some cracks developing. I mean, that is the stress area as you feel it.
Yes, certainly. I'm worried about that. I'm paying attention to any data coming from that, and that's going to create volatility. I mean, today we've seen MLAC being volatile because of the news that was released today.
The other thing that people were talking to me about I've been to Istanbul, I think, four times already this year, is the lack of rainfall, which, again, you know, we sort of forget that it's not just the agriculture of Turkey, which is tremendously important, but there is a considerable amount of hydro and other hydro generation, power generation. And Turkey is, of course, energy poor. Does the whole energy equation, you know, the lack of rainfall, the problems in Syria, in Iraq, and in Russia, does that worry you as a strategic risk for certain sectors of the economy?
Yeah, I mean, as a result of the climate change, Turkey is being impacted by that, and you know that does worry me. Whether that's going to impact the summer months for both consumers as well as corporations, that's something that as a softer factor that you need to monitor. But on the Syrian situation, that's also a stress point, in my opinion. If things escalate from here, you know, you need to watch the geopolitical repercussions of any escalated activity on the border.
Although there does seem to be a rapprochement between the Turks and the Israelis, which is an interesting thing. Of course, they fell out over the incident with the Israeli commandos on the Turkish ship going to Gaza a few years ago. And whilst trade relationships have continued to grow over the past years, the political relationships have been a little fraught, but there are now signs that they're talking to each other again, and of course that is, as much as anything, an energy play.
Yes, it is, and it's a positive, and you have to balance out some positives and negatives in the region. You also have the potential positive upside surprise from Iranian situation and whether the sanctions are going to be softened further from here. You also have the northern Iraq pipeline, which is still an important, potentially a long-term game changer for the Turkish economy and the reliance on oil imports.
Particularly from Mr. Putin. Alper, thank you very much. I mean, we've covered a lot in a very short period of time, and thank you for that. We will no doubt speak to you before, but we will certainly see you at the Eurasia Forum, where I'll have the opportunity to interview you, probably in a similar sort of way, but live on stage. So I'm very much looking forward to that.
I look forward to it. Thank you.
Good. Well, let's you know, we'll be keeping our eyes on Turkey. I hope you will be too. Thank you all for listening. Our next podcast will be, I'm not quite sure what we'll be looking for, but Dave has just whispered in my ears that we are going to be looking at Saudi Arabia as we move towards our Saudi month, which is May, where we have not one but two Saudi events. We'll all be Saudied up to the eyeballs by the end of May, but that's not a bad thing. So once again, thank you, Alper, and thank you all for listening.